she does.
Log Talk Radio.
I knew she'd say that. Oh, it's getting creepier and creepier around here. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I am Dale Kay from Spook Show, along with my co-host.
And I'm and I'm Dave Binkley from The Weirdness, really bad movie.
And we're here to bring you an exciting...
I am, I think. Let me check my wallet out. Hell yeah, it's me.
Oh great, you're carding yourself. Are you old enough to get in here?
Hey, you know what? You never know what executive order is going to come out of Washington these days, so I'm prepared.
Yeah, that's right. Great show tonight. An episode of Escape.
Oh, I'm looking.
Oh, so am I. And an episode of Escape called Bloodbath, starring Vincent Price.
One and only Vincent Price, yeah.
Yep. And we're here with our usual gang. What's that?
I was just going to give a little background, but go ahead.
Please fire away.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, Escape was one of the two best anthology programs CBS had to offer, and actually it was probably because of Suspense Escape came about. They got such acclaim and attention from Suspense, which was, basically was a great place for stories, but they also brought in a lot of Hollywood people to be in there, people that you didn't usually hear on radio that were so busy in the movies. Even there was an episode there with Desi Arnaz and Lucy, and there was an episode, Danny Kaye did an episode, Fibber McGee and Molly did an episode. People you wouldn't regularly think of doing a drama radio series showed up on Suspense. But they got so much acclaim, and they got so many script ideas that they kind of helped to bleed that over to the idea for Escape, which ran from 1947 to 54, and it's half a miracle, Dale, that it ran that long, because it was all over the charts. I mean, it had two pilots. The first pilot, it was the same episode, but the first time they did it, they thought they might call the series Out of This World, and it was Dead of Night, and it starred the same people two times. The Dead of Night episode, first Out of This World and then as Escape, was starred radio actors. And that's the biggest difference between Escape and Suspense, is that Escape used mostly some of the best radio actors around, with some occasional people like Vincent Price or some other movie stars upon occasion. But the first episode, the first two pilots were done by Barry Kroger, a familiar radio voice, as well as a guy named Art Carney, who did a lot of shows like the FBI and War and things like that. I think we've heard of Art Carney before.
Yeah, he's been around the block. I love the concept of the idea of Escape. I mean, the intro sets you up. It's why we're here. It's what we love, whether it's horror, science fiction, fantasy stories, sometimes even a good thrilling murder mystery. This is why we're here, and Escape, the introduction piece for it, really sets you up for the kind of entertainment it seems like we're drawn to.
Yeah, and most of the hosting was done by William Conrad and Paul Frees, where they'd start off with something like Tired of the Everyday Life, Ever Dream of a Life of Romantic Adventure, Want to Get Away from It All,
Yes,
We Offer You, Escape.
Escape. There were so many good shows like that.
Walls of Today for a half hour high adventure.
Yeah. And shows like Escape and Suspense were great. There was another one I recall called The Chase. I don't know how long that one ran. It doesn't seem like it ran very long. But I got to hear a few episodes.
That was more of a 1950s show.
An adventure type show.
One of the reasons why I was kind of surprised that it lasted, of course, almost its entire run, it was sustained by the CBS network, which is why they used the radio actors. They only had a sponsor about half a year, and that was in 1950 when I think it was Richfield Oil Company sponsored them. And after that, it basically was sustained by the CBS radio network. But, you know, when it started off as a summer replacement series on Mondays. It went in fall and went to Wednesday nights. Then before 47 was over, it went back to Mondays. And then it went to Sunday, Saturday evenings, Thursday evenings, Wednesday evenings, Sunday afternoons, Wednesday evenings, Sunday evenings, Thursday. Amazing anybody could even find the show.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that is what almost killed MASH.
Yeah. This did really stand the test of time. And before we get into part one of Bloodbath, let's also welcome some of our usual gang of suspects, as the wise man put it. We have, of course, King Charles. Hi, King.
It's King Charles the First to you, my baffle.
Yes, sir, number one.
Well, there ain't going to be a King Charles II unless I can find a very, very rich woman.
Well, hey, you got the airwaves. Give it your best shot. No.
That was the way to do it.
Okay, ladies, I'm 64 years old, going to hit 65 pretty quick.
64 young.
My kingdom is 1,121 square feet in Baltimore, Maryland. It's on the second floor. It has a very nice balcony. And if you are over the age of 55 and have oodles of money that you don't mind sharing with me, call into the show.
That's right, folks.
Right,
it's the King Charles Telethon. The number to call, 646-378-0264.
So that the king, can get a second balcony.
Yes. And
Gar's there, right?
Yeah, here a blah, there a blah, everywhere a blah, blah. Gar the Ghoul.
Blah, blah, yeah. It is I, Gar the Ghoul. Yes. I am here. I'm as live as an electric eel this week.
That's shocking.
Well, if you ever, have you ever lived in New York?
I've been to New York.
You've been there.
Well, I lived in upstate New York for a while. I was in Utica, New York.
So you often went down to the Battery then?
No, I keep batteries in my pocket. No, I don't know, man.
Isn't there a state prison in Utica, New York there, Carr?
I didn't hang around long enough to get caught myself. I was in and out of there, you know. It was, you know.
Well, as far as New York, I've seen the map. No. And as a youth, I visited Niagara Falls.
Slowly
I turned.
As a youth, you say.
Inch by inch.
Ain't nothing. Someone did mention Art Carney, didn't they? Ain't nothing.
Yes.
Get over here.
Pow to the moon.
Alice, hey. One of these days.
Yeah.
Just a quick interesting fact. Art Carney was the second banana on the Maury Amsterdam TV show.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. And
I loved Maury on Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's only two episodes
that
exist. But he's very funny on that. It's worth looking up.
I have a humorous anecdote about Maury Amsterdam, okay?
Okay.
Now, when I was quite a bit younger, about, say, 25 years ago, by crikey, my son was an infant, and Mrs. K used to work days, and I worked nights as a disc jockey, so I had my son all day long. Well, when he's real young, you know, there's lots of diapers, lots of feeding, and I was completely out of it. I lived the first 2 years of his life on the couch. And I remember being all bleary-eyed watching this show on public television with Maury Amsterdam and his partner on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Rosemarie?
Rosemarie, yeah.
Rosemarie?
And they were on this show together. It was a color show, And it was about this hero dog, like a husky dog that was. And I remember being, I almost felt like an emotional housewife watching this. Oh, that dog looks like my dog Stormy, and these, you know, and there were these cute adventures. You know what I mean? It was like kid stuff, family stuff, but so much for my humorous anecdote.
What was the name of the show?
They also did an episode of Friends together, also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't watch much of Friends. I didn't think it was that, but I did watch that one because they were on there together.
Wow.
So that was.
Do you know what the name of the TV show that they did was, the doggy show?
No, I don't. I was always so bleary-eyed and so short on sleep that I never really watched an entire episode from front to back. But I just remember being on at roughly the same time. It was probably a time when Michael was crashed and Dad could catch a cat nap with his hand in the bassinet. You know what I mean?
We're slowly working our ways to the 6 degrees of Mary Tyler Moore, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
I felt that coming
God
up.
Bless her.
Yeah. There
God
you
bless
go.
Her sweetheart.
So in tonight's amazing radio episode of Escape, we get to hear Paul Frees as the announcer. I got to tell you, if I didn't go look it up, I was sitting there going, it's Orson Welles. It's Orson Welles doing the narration. But no, it's the amazing talents of Paul Frees. Great guy.
He had a similar timbre to his voice, I think, as Orson Welles.
Yeah, if you listen to the two, you can definitely tell the distinction. And once I was told Paul Frees, then it was like, yeah, it could never be Orson. But before, it was like, is that Orson? It was.
Yeah.
Paul Frees was in 40 episodes of Escape. A lot of times, you know, did the announcement, but also did bits in there. Sometimes was featured. 56 episodes for Ben Wright, who also did a series called The Lockup. Harry Bartell did 55. John Daner did 54 episodes and actually wrote some of the episodes of Escape as well.
They like William Conrad in there, too.
Parley Bear was 26 episodes, who was Chester Proudfoot on the Radio Gunsmoke and the mayor on Andy Griffith's show. And Jack Webb was on 13, but as Gar said, William Conrad was in 90 episodes of Escape.
That's amazing. And, you know, between the three of you, this is like, thanks for the free education, guys. I am eating all this stuff up. you know, I'm just scratching the surface.
And they used Modest Mussorgsky in a slight twist on the night on Bald Mountain as far as part of the intro. And there's organ music
right
in there, which is just fantastic for radio. Organ music is just
actually
amazing.
Organ music is the only music this show had.
Yeah, it's
the
just
only music they had.
But yeah, Modest Mussorgsky. Mussorgsky, what a guy! What a name!
I think the organ music gives it that period feel. You know, some of the fully orchestrated shows are a lot easier, I think, for a modern audience to listen to. But you really get the feel of the period when you hear the organ music in these.
I was goofing around with the mouth organ, and I got to tell you, it's kind of like the banjo. You can't really do anything really spooky or depressing with a harmonica. I mean, you really, there's not, you know, what can you do?
Unless you're on the train tracks.
Unless you're on the train tracks, and then, yeah, you can get a train thing going. But, yeah, it's like a banjo. Try doing a depressing song on a banjo. Good luck.
Well, then that's what I want at my funeral. I want banjos and I want harmonicas.
We'll bring the Weirdness Harmonic Orchestra then for you.
Well,
sure,
I can bring
perfect.
Garzus and garmonicas. How's that?
That would be beautiful. I'm weeping here thinking about it.
I rebranded certain instruments in the world as gars. Garzus, definitely. Garzus. I got Garzus around here somewhere. I got the gar whistle, but and the garmonica, yeah. Great stuff.
The garmonica, of course.
The garmonica. Yeah, that guy.
time is so fleeting here. Let's go ahead and
let's
listen
start,
to the first part, gentlemen, of Escape with Vincent Price in Bloodbath.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Escape, brought to you by your Richfield gasoline dealer and the Richfield Oil Corporation of New York. Marketers of Richfield gasolines with Xylene, Richlube, all-weather motor oil, and other famous petroleum products. Look for the Richfield Eagle on the cream and blue pumps. Tonight, we escape to the jungles of South America and a seething tale of terror and violence as told by James Poe in Bloodbath, starring Mr. Vincent Price.
By portaging the rapids and walking the mules in the shallower stretches, we'd managed to get our supplies and equipment more than 1,700 miles up the river. After this, further navigable passage being impossible, we'd traveled by foot, hacking our way through the thick, steaming jungle, coaxing and goading the heavily laden beasts. We'd left the jungle and begun the climb. 11 days later, high in the Andes, we found our objective. We set to work, hard work. And then, on a hazy afternoon in late May, we found it. We'll never forget the scene. Below us, the mountain swung down to the jungle, which stretched eastward, far as the eye could see. The peaks above us had cut off the setting sun, and the light had a curious, violet quality. The dank, chill wind whispering and gusting set the sparse timber scrubs to trembling and shuddering, and the mules, disdainful of their five strange masters, foraged the cacti and dwarf pines. The instruments were set up and the specimens were at hand, and now, crouched and tense, we leaned forward.
How about it, Hess?
Wait. The tube's got to warm up. Come on, come on.
Wait, will you?
I've waited 5 years for this moment.
500, you mean? 5 million? Come on, Hessie. How about it, Hess?
Mm-hmm. Okay, give him the sample, O'Brien.
Yeah, here.
Come on, baby.
Shut up, will you?
Shh. Here goes. Switch on. Holy cow, good. Good. It's fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, Hessie, what's the word?
Yeah, Hessie, give.
Gentlemen. Gentlemen. Unless this machine is busted... Unless this Geiger counter has forgotten its multiplication table, we have discovered the richest load of uranium ore known to man.
I won't go into the details of how we'd come to locate the ore, because that's a story in itself. Suffice it to say that late in the afternoon of that hazy May day, the five of us, gamblers all, came to the end of our rainbow, found our pot of gold.
The vein runs all the way up the side of the mountain.
Must be worth $1 million bucks.
A billion,
$1 trillion bucks. Do you boys realize what we've got here?
Sure we do.
We've got the world at our feet. Why, the man who gets the strike registered in his name can be a king. Every country in the world is going to come running up to him with trunks full of money and power.
You tell him, Hessie.
Power?
Yeah, we'll make the United States the most powerful nation on earth.
Why the United States?
Oh, you wouldn't sell to anybody else, would you?
I'm a businessman, Harris.
You're a fool.
No, no. I'm a businessman.
$1 trillion.
Oh, gents, we've got the world at our feet. Split five ways.
The world at our feet. Split five ways. That night, as I lay huddled under my thin blanket, I wondered what it would be like being a wealthy man. Wondered if it were really true. Wondered how it would affect the others, how it would affect me. In the morning, we were to set off on the long return journey down to the jungle and through the jungle to the launch and down the river to civilization. There, we'd register our claim, purchase, if need be, the land, lease it perhaps from the government. Oh, millionaires, world at our feet. Uranium, enough to blow up the whole universe. Power.
Harris, wake up.
Wake up, Harris.
Oh, good morning, millionaire.
Weenus, wake up.
Sun's coming up. Hey, hey, where are the others?
They're gone.
Gone?
Yes, Dumont and O'Brien. They took the mules and most of the food and cut out.
When?
How do I know when? Sometime during the night.
But why?
Why? $1 trillion, that's why.
Oh, no.
Once they get down to the jungle, they'll have to travel on foot. There's 10 days' march to the river. If they beat us to the boat, we're stuck with 1,500 miles of jungle between us and safety.
15? Impossible. We'd never make 100.
That's right. We've got to catch him, or we're dead.
We traveled as lightly as possible. It was a risky business, doubly so because O'Brien and Dumont had taken our guns with them. The only weapons we had between us were one long machete and two pocket knives. These would be of little protection against jaguars, bushmasters, tapirs, boa constrictors, and the rest of it. Fortunately, they'd left our number one necessity to survival. They'd forgotten to take our quinine. This and our food was all we carried. The long descent to the jungle was slow going on foot. It was here that we nearly gave up hope. We moved as fast as we could, but we were no match for men who were riding. But we reached the jungle. Then things took a better turn. Here, the thick vines and heavy undergrowth was, we knew, almost an impossible hazard for a riding man. And we could see their boot prints mingled with those of the mules. We knew that they were having trouble, too. The animals were afraid of many things in the jungle. Would balk suddenly require careful handling. We pushed ahead as rapidly as possible, battling mosquitoes, fume flies, matukas, and the blood-sucking carpazo ticks, and of course, the jungle itself, with its never-ending barrage of razor grasses, needle vines, swamps, bog traps, and so forth. It was hot, stinking hot. The going was hard, but we had to make it. We couldn't travel at night. We'd taken our flashlight. We'd bundle up as best we could, protecting ourselves not from the cold, it was hot and muggy even at dawn, but from the mosquitoes, and as we progressed towards the river area, from the bats, vampire bats. Ever seen them? They're small, rather fragile-looking little things. By day they hang, heads down from the trees, wings folded like clusters of rotten fruit. By night, they hunt. They have razor-sharp teeth, bite like the finest steel scalpels. Their object is to break the skin very delicately, start the blood to coming, and then they simply hang on and sit. Without mosquito netting, we had a rough time of it, a sleepless time. But we managed to keep on going. And on the third day...
It's not your fault. We can't make it to the river before them.
But that's so easy. We've got to make
it right, Wayne.
And even if we do catch up, they got the gun. Huh? What are you talking?
Too quiet, quiet. I heard something.
What did you hear?
Gunfire, yeah. Come on. It can't be more than a mile or two ahead. Come on.
We ran through the jungle, following the fresh marks of the animals and the two men. And a half an hour or so later, we broke into a little clearing, and there was Dumont.
Dumont. He's dead. Shot in the back. Good old Obie. Sweet guy, that Obie.
Here, come on. Turn him over.
Really been sweating, huh?
Yeah, it's malaria. See his face?
Good old Obie.
And Dumont came down with malaria, probably started to slow him down.
Sweet guy, that Obie.
Come on.
Come on, let's go.
Hey, they should have remembered the quinine.
I got no sympathy for Zuma.
You know what would be nice?
What?
If that Obi should get malaria now.
Yeah. He'd be helpless.
He'd ask me for quinine. And I'd throw him a stone.
On we went. Now there were no boot marks with the mule tracks. Apparently O'Brien was riding one of the animals. From time to time we'd see a flurry of tracks churned up as though he had had to dismount to tug one of the beasts back onto the trail. We followed the tracks for another 2 days, and then on the sixth day, we found one of the mules.
How you feeling, boy? Huh? Where's your saddle?
He really looks beat. Look at those marks on his flanks.
Vampire.
Yeah. That leaves O'Brien on foot.
Yeah.
Hey, you hear that?
The launch.
We're to the river.
He's starting the motor. Come on.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't very far, just a few hundred yards. And the path was strewn with O'Brien's discarded supplies. Quite suddenly, we came out of the jungle and onto a narrow white sandbar. The river. And there, not 30 feet away from us, just drifting off into the deep, dark, fast-moving waters, was O'Brien in the launch. O'Brien!
Thank you.
Look at him. He's like a skeleton.
The launch lurched dizzily as it floated downstream. O'Brien was feeble, sweating, possessed. He had the fever, had it bad.
Come on, let's go after
him. You can't. This is piranha water.
Cannibal fish. You'll eat you.
Yeah. Hey, Obi. Hey, you know me, Obi. Your old pal, help me. Hey, what do you say, Obi?
He staggered dizzily about the cockpit trying to start the engine. He was laughing, and he was so weak that he could barely spin the flywheel to the kicker.
Obi! He's the... Good Lord, he's in the water.
The fish, the piranhas.
Thank God, look at this.
One moment we saw him swimming weakly, his large, fever-ridden eyes turned imploringly toward us, and the next moment he was gone, leaving only a large, red, churning patch on the water. The piranhas are small. Rarely more than 12 or 14 inches long, small fish with large, powerful jaws, teeth like broken glass, and an insatiable, maniacal appetite for flesh. The launch, caught by the deep, fast-moving waters, rocked softly this way and that and moved on downstream, away. Away around a bend and out of sight.
One of Escape, featuring Vincent Price in Bloodbath.
No, that guy didn't escape, did he?
Not too well.
Boy, that
you know what?
Something
with all, those, with all the episodes that they had of Escape, actually, they reused the same script and so many times the same actors as well. For instance, Shipment of Mute Fate. They did that one 4 times. They did Man Who Could Work Miracles 3 times. Diamonds As Big as the Ritz 3 times. Evening Primrose. That's a one we're going to have to feature sometime, Dale. Really, really good story about the people living in the back of a department store. That was done 3 times. One of my favorites also, Lineage and Versus the Ants, was done 3 times. And Three Skeleton Key was done 3 times. And I was looking here for one that was done twice. I was The Man Who Stole the Bible. We talk about the different people that were on these shows and such. That one featured a young man called Will Gear as the devil in that episode. And Will Gear, of course, went on to be Grandpa in the Waltons, amongst many other things.
No relation to Richard Gere, I'm sure.
This is another great morality play about greed that quickly lends itself to terror, doesn't it?
Well, that was scary. I mean, that whoever wrote that show wrote a scary scenario. I mean, that was, that's a really frightening episode.
And remember, about quinine, don't leave home without it. I tell you.
Right. You can still get that in some of your carbonated waters.
Club Soda, I think, has it.
Yes.
Which one?
It does, in the yellow bottle.
Club Soda.
Yep.
Yes, Club Soda, yes.
Yes, yeah. It's crazy, the quinine thing, because they're back then, and I guess still today, if you expose yourself to it, you have the opportunity to get good old yummy malaria, which actually is a parasite. It's called a Plasmodium falciparum. Actually, it really is. It's Plasmodium falciparum is the parasite that mosquitoes transmit to give you malaria. It's great stuff. I've stymied the panel. Okay.
When you said parasite, I'm sorry, I froze. I was thinking of Elvira because that's a parasite.
That gets one of them. There you go. All
have
right.
Your sight on the pear and whatever.
Ba-doing. Yeah. Yeah,
Vincent Price,
definitely.
A great narrator for this episode, telling the story, you know, as someone who experienced it, and it's very sketchy.
Yeah, this is like a game of Clue. They're gonna keep running out of people and run across more bodies. Mm. Big body count.
Yep.
Yes.
They're now done, and then there were two.
And they talk about vampire bats, but it's in passing. And then there are vampire bats we have to watch out for, and pythons. And he describes all the stuff about vampire bats, and then we never hear about vampire bats again. It's like, wait, what was that about? I guess that was just FYI, vampire bats.
Hey, they got to fill a 20 to 25-minute show. Let them throw in some vampire bats.
That's
right.
I don't know why they didn't throw in the Plasmodium falciparum. I mean, you know.
Is it showing over?
Well, there's 10 seconds right there.
I know. And it just rolls right off the tongue. Plasmodium.
Well, maybe,
you know.
Maybe Vincent Price had trouble saying that. You know, they had to take it out.
Could have been. And then there was the plasmodium. Yeah, you couldn't.
I can't picture him having trouble saying anything. Vincent Price is such a
You know, you hear that story, you know, it's, I guess it's kind of common. You know, I'd listen to, you know, so-and-so, you know, if they were reading the telephone book.
Oh, yeah.
And he's one of those people that if they said, all right, read this telephone book, it would still be entertaining. He would make it entertaining.
Telephone book's got a great cast, but there's really not much plot to it.
Water and piranhas. Piranha water. Beware the
piranha water.
There should have been a sign that said,
at your local drugstore now, get your piranha water.
Mm-hmm. I tell you.
Did you mention the
cast,
Dave?
Did I mention who?
Did you mention who was in the cast?
Beyond Vincent Price.
Vincent Price and Paul Frees. I'm not sure who else was, who the other character was. Paul Frees was the first one to get killed off, as far as the cast goes. When he was one of the ones celebrating, and when they escaped, he was the one that got shot along the trail.
Okay.
Yeah. The thing I love about
Vincent
Price.
Well, they had one big screamer in there.
Yeah. You know, the thing I love about Vincent Price is the guy seemed to be the penultimate gentleman, could play any role, never took himself too seriously. He could play comedy, you know. And really, I think in his life and his professional career, he really didn't get involved in any scandals. That I believe once he was in or around the big scandal around the $64,000 or the whatever it was, maybe it was a $6.40 question back then. But
the game show?
Whatever. Yeah, the game show thing, and he was questioned, and immediately he walked away squeaky clean. I mean, this guy, he's one of my heroes, Vincent Price.
Well, and like you mentioned, he did comedy because he did some great comedy as in the Radio's The Saint. He actually did a lot of radio because not only was he doing Suspense and Escapes and many other programs, especially the ones that were redoing movies that he might have been in. But he also did The Saint. He did The Price of Fear,
The Price
and,
of Fear. I love that one.
Yeah. And even into the 1980s, when Elliot Lewis was producing the Sears and then Mutual Radio Theater, he was the host on Wednesday nights, which was kind of your intrigue, mystery night that they had. I'm sorry, that was Tuesday night. Wednesday night was comedy night.
He was also
Tuesday
on Hollywood
was,
Squares a few times, I think.
He was, yes.
He was.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yes, he was. And as usual, he was very clever with his responses. I like
he was no Paul Lynn, but yeah, he was good.
I'm very fond of his comedic appearances with Peter Lorre, like in Comedy of Terrors and other films. The
Raven.
A film with Basil Rathbone. It was a horror film, but it was a horror comedy.
That was Comedy of Terrors, yes.
It's a good movie.
That was really funny. I love that one.
Karloff, Lorre, and
Price.
Basil Rathbone and Vincent Price, all four of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even the lady.
I think that was more a contractual agreement thing. They were going, well, we've got them on contract. Let's put them all together and see what happens.
Price's wife in that
it
movie
wasn't
was
in
somebody
Boris's
too.
Highlight of his career is towards kind of the end of his career. At least it looked like it. He looked tired in the films that they did have. The Raven and Comedy of Terrors. Yeah, he looked a little like, okay.
Part of the problem with Karloff and those is that Karloff loved going by the script. Peter Lorre really liked to do things freestyle and almost improv, and Vincent Price could do it either way. So Lorre would be improv, and he would be going along, and it was pissing off Karloff because they weren't sticking to the script.
He was getting older, and you know, it's pretty well known that Karloff was pretty ill, but he was a stout trooper. He worked up until the end.
With his arthritis.
Didn't Karloff host another series? I can't think of the name of it.
Thriller?
Thriller?
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay.
Thriller,
yeah,
that was his.
Yeah.
But he probably had another one as well.
He had The Veil on television.
Right.
He had The Veil that was actually, yeah, didn't really make it to television because the studio ran out. He also did one over in England. Guys can probably help me with this. Where he played kind of like a retired colonel from.
Inspector Blake.
Ended up helping Scotland Yard. Yes, yes. Blake, yes.
Yeah.
And there's a few of those episodes hanging around out there as well.
I want to take a minute to thank the folks in the chat. Hi, Fogsbane and Evil Annie Reppert. And of course, some of the folks here participating as we listen to Escape Bloodbath. With Vincent Price. You guys ready for part two?
Let it rip! Bring it on. We need those sharks, right? No,
and now we
sharks.
Return you to Escape, starring Vincent Price.
We picked over the supplies O'Brien had left on the shore. There wasn't much we wanted. A gun without ammunition, a few tins of food, a tent and some bedding, cooking equipment, a coil of rope. We loaded these things onto the mule and set off through the jungle, downstream along the river's course, 1,500 miles to civilization. And we had it tough. The jungle was thick along the river's bank, and we made little progress. Not more than 5 miles that day, but the next day, we rounded a bend, keeping close to the shore, and there, about a quarter mile below us and nuzzling the opposite shore, grounded on the sand, lay the launch.
Looks shallow enough here.
Yeah,
Dad. Yeah, but what about the fish?
How deep does it look to you, Harris? It's the deepest spot on me.
Oh, I don't know, maybe 2.5 feet, maybe 3.
Most of it's less than that.
I got an idea.
Shoot. We got to get across the launch, see? So here's what we do. We throw away everything. There'll be food and water on the launch, see?
Yeah.
Now, you see that little patch of sand in the middle of the river where the bar shows?
Yeah.
We go that way. That's bound to be the shallowest way, see?
How do we go?
On the mule, the three of us.
Ah, you nuts.
This mule ain't in such bad condition it can't get the three of us across 70 feet of shallow water.
What do you say, Harris?
Why not?
All right. I'll get aboard first.
Come on. Get farther up, Weemsy. You're the lightest.
Yeah.
Harris, you get on next, sir. Hang on to Weemsy. Here, here. Carry this coil of rope around your neck. We may need it. I've got the machete strapped to my back.
Hey, you set, Weems?
Yeah.
Now hold tight to me, Harris.
Don't worry. If I go, you go too.
Yeah, and if he goes, I go.
So let's hang on, gents. Yeah. Let's really hang on.
As long as he's moving fast, he can't get at his legs. Isn't that right?
He's not showing anything to him but hoofs and hair.
Hold his head up, Weems. Don't let him look down.
All set?
Yeah, all set.
All right, here we go. All right, get on. Come on, come on. Come on, baby.
I felt the mule lurch when he stepped into the water. The sand was crossier here than on the shore.
Sand, huh?
Ahead, not 40 feet away, lay the little spit of land. The mule refused to run, couldn't run, and before he'd taken 10 steps, I knew he was too weak to support the three of us. From every direction in the swirling water about us came small, shadowy, dark shapes.
Come on.
The piranhas.
Don't stop. Come on, baby. Keep moving, baby. Come on. Move along, baby.
He can't do it.
You gotta do it, baby. Come on. Three of them. What are those?
Piranhas were churning the water about us, and coming in from beyond them were four or five long, dark shapes, 6 and 7 feet long, thick and wriggling electric eels.
Jeff Stingham, get along to the back!
Get into the sandbar!
Faster, faster, come on!
Made it!
Straw about electric eels. I can throw a jolt that'll kill a jaguar. I got jaws like a vice.
So, here we are, gentlemen, stuck. Just 30 feet of water between us and the shore. Get across it, and we can get to the launch and the civilization and all of it.
The three of us are too much for that mule.
Only 30 feet.
Why, you could run it in seconds.
You see those little shadows around us in the water?
I see those little shadows around us. You don't have to draw pictures.
Hey.
Here's another bright idea coming up.
As a matter of fact, yeah.
Yeah, hold on to your hat, Harris.
We got that coil of rope.
Yeah.
The mule could carry one of us. That mule's not in such bad shape, you know.
Yes.
Tie the rope over his bridle. Then one of us pulls him over with him fast. You see, one rides, and then the other two pull him back.
Yeah.
And the next one gets on.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Oh, I can't stay here.
It's a natural.
Who goes first?
Me, on account I'm the lightest. I won't tire him so much.
How about it, Harris?
All right.
Well, get going then.
Okay.
Tie that rope to his bridle.
I'm doing it.
All right, give me the machete. What do you want the machete for?
I want it, that's all. Give me.
Okay.
All right, now you two, get at the end of the spit. Because when you play out the line, you don't get it caught in his legs.
Well, you think of everything.
That's right, I'm a smart boy.
Get ready with the line.
You sure it's tied fast to the bridle?
Yeah, I'm sure.
No funny business, Weems. All we got to do is jerk this rope once while you're over that water and you're done for.
You're a sharp article.
Yeah, that's right, but not sharp enough. Hey,
Weems, you cut the rope. Come on, suckers.
The rope, our only salvation, was cut. And now Weems, grinning and riding, was out into the stream, heading for the shore in safety. He went not 15 feet when one of the long, dark, wriggling shapes made for the mule and got his leg. The mule reared up on his hind legs, the eel clinging to his foot, pumping paralyzing shocks into him. Weems clutched his neck with one hand and slapped him on the flank with the flat of the machete with the other. The mule came down and more eels went for his legs. He began to lurch sideways. Weems swung the long steel blade in an arc, barely missing the mule's leg, and connected with one of the eels. His hair seemed to stand on end. His other arm released the mule's neck. The arm holding the blade was extended stiffly, still caught in the thick, muscular back of the electric eel. And then the mule reared again, and Weems fell back into the water. The mule, freed of Weems, made the shore and vanished into the jungle. We turned away. No man could watch what was happening to Weems and retain his sanity. And so, there we were. Hess and I on that sand spit which the river was slowly washing away. Night coming, vampire bats coming, and all about us, the electric eels and the little cannibal fish waiting. There was no moon. There were evil stars, red and yellow. It was a black sky, and against it, blacker shapes, the vampire bats. We waved our arms and kept them off, but again and again during that long and terrible night, they brushed against us, squealing and squeaking, trying to get it. Dark, evil, thirsting bats.
1,000 years later came the dawn. That water's taken a lot of sand away. This thing isn't much bigger than a card table. Look at them. Look at those fish. You think they had enough to eat yesterday? Listen, Harris. No matter what happens now, at least you and I have played it square, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Shake my hand, Harris.
All right.
Because I think I got an idea on how we can get out of here.
What?
Yeah. Look up there.
Yeah.
See that vine hanging down from the big tree?
It's over the water, and it must be 15 feet up.
Yeah, but if you were on it, you could do a Tarzan to the shore.
The rope?
That's right. Now, if we can just lasso the end of that and pull tight, we'll have enough swing to make it across. Swing like a pendulum, if you follow me. One guy gets on the other shoulders to swing over to get the start, see? Then when he gets to shore, he fastens a rock and swings the rope back to the other.
That vine will hold. It'll work.
It took us 2 hours before we managed to lasso the end of that vine. And then we tested it again and again until we were positive it would hold a man's weight. And then we were ready.
Stand good and steady now, pal. I'm going to go easy on you, but don't shake. Just you spill me in that water, I'm a gone guy.
I'm ready.
I'm ready. Good luck. Here.
No! I felt his feet leave my shoulders. And then he was off, skimming the water with his feet drawn up, and then, miraculously, he was on the shore.
Goodbye! Goodbye!
Yeah.
Like a breeze, huh?
Yeah, like a breeze.
Hey, any rocks around there?
Sorry.
He smiled at me and shrugged and then looked down the stream at the launch. I knew that smile, that $1 trillion smile. It said, so long, sucker.
Still do it, Hess. Send me the rope.
You're too nice a guy, Harris. You and I would never get along.
You can have it all, Hess. Every scrap of it. Only for the love of mercy, send me the rope.
No, you want some. You wouldn't approve of what I mean to do with it.
Harris!
He stood there laughing at me and shaking his head slowly. But above him, just over his head, was another vine, thick and mottled, and it was moving.
Look out, Harris! Harris!
He didn't understand or didn't hear me. Just stood there smiling and shaking his head. The boa constrictor dropped heavily and accurately, a thrashing tangle of scaly muscles. The sun was hot, blistering hot. I was alone, all alone, except for the ever-waiting piranha. Hess's body was hidden by the low, scrubby vines and palmettos. Several hours later, I saw the boa, now gorged, slither lumpily away. I waited, and I waited. From time to time, I thought of stepping out into the stream. It would be over very quickly, I told myself, very quickly. I couldn't. And then I noticed an odd thing. The current, which had been sweeping the sand away, had shifted slightly. A whim, a miracle. And now new sand from some sunken bar was beginning to pile up between me and the shore, grain by grain, rib by rib. I watched it. And I watched. And I watched. And at 5 o'clock that afternoon, I walked ashore to the launch. And didn't even get my feet wet. Nice where I live. Quiet little streets, nice people, nice kids, nice country. Peaceful, nice peace. I know where there's enough uranium to blow it all to hell. Want it?
Just go up the river. Up the river, it's for the taking.
Ask Dumont and Obie and Weems and Hess. $1 trillion worth. Enough to give the whole world a bloodbath. yourself included.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. And tonight starred Mr. Vincent Price. Bloodbath was written by James Poe. Others in the cast were Wally Mayer, Ted DeCorsia, Paul Frees, and Tony Barrett. Special music arranged and played by Ivan Dittmars. Next week.
You are groping your way slowly through the dark hold of a ship at sea, moving carefully, step by step, dreading to find what you know is there. Death in the form of a deadly bushmaster from which there is no escape.
Next week at this time, the Litchfield Oil Corporation of New York invites you to escape to the Caribbean and a grim voyage of impending death, as Martin Storm tells it in his exciting tale, A Shipment of Mute Fate. Goodbye then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. Tom Hanlon speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Dun, 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 dun. Oh, I just love Paul Frees. I remember him from cartoons and some of the Rankin Bass animated holiday specials.
It kind of makes you wonder why Paul Frees didn't do Escape with the Pillsbury Doughboy voice instead, you know?
But he also was the voice of the Haunted Mansion at Walt Disney.
Yes.
That and Scrooge. Not what Scrooge was. What was the professor? The duck for Disney as well. One of the professors. It wasn't Scrooge McDuck, but the one that was a professor.
Professor Drake. Von Drake?
Yeah.
Professor Von Drake.
Was that Paul Frees did that?
That was Paul Frees, yes.
What's that guy's name? Hans Conrad?
No, that was Paul Frees.
Ah, okay. So the moral of this story, the sands of time make for a great bridge.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I think the name of that TV show that Maury Amsterdam was in, it sounds like it was a show called The Littlest Hobo.
Yes, that was it.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know if you'd mentioned that or not, but I was looking it up to see what
you sparked a memory there, and I remember it now. I think that was the dog's name, maybe, was Hobo?
I would assume so, yeah.
And somehow Maury and Rosemarie always got hooked up in his adventures, this dog. He was like a later day Lassie type dog situation thing.
Well, they were, what was it, Rosemarie was singing, I think she was called Baby Rosemarie at the time. She was like 4 or 5 or 6
years
old.
Yeah, she was Baby Rosemarie back in the late 30s, early 40s, until she got to be about 12, but she was a little old to be Baby Rosemarie then.
Yeah. But those two together.
She sang a couple times.
I mean,
she sang a couple times in the... Dick Van Dyke shows, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those two together, I mean, it's like Dick Van Dyke was just the straight man, and those two would go back and forth, and that was a treat, you know.
Well, the best thing was when Al Cooley would walk into the office and Maury Amsterdam would go at it.
Yeah.
That was the highlight of each show, I think.
Yeah. He
Richard
would shred
Deacon.
Those guys.
When Richard Deacon. Yeah.
Rob Reiner as the big boss, he was cool, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Carl, excuse me. Did I say Rob? I meant Carl Reiner.
Carl Reiner, yeah. I saw him when he was on that show last night. It was nice to see him back in old action again.
There was a show, one of the Dick Van Dyke shows, there was... one where Mary Tyler Moore, she gets on a game show, and she reveals the fact that Carl Reiner wears a toupee. And she goes into his office to try to apologize. And on the, I mean, the scene where he's sitting behind his desk and he's got all these, I guess, dummy heads with his different toupees on. Here's my summer toupee. Here's my, oh, gee, don't you need a haircut toupee? That was one of the funniest episodes I've ever seen.
Yes, that was. They had a lot of great shows. What a great complete cast. And Carl Reiner all put together. That was supposed to be for his show, but for some reason, thank goodness they chose Dick Van Dyke. I don't think it would have lasted as much as I like Carl Reiner. I don't think it would have lasted with him being the focal point of the entire series.
I would have to agree. I mean, his humor was a little sharper than Dick Van Dyke. He maybe if they had paired him with somebody else, because I don't think Mary Tyler Moore was really suited for a kind of sharper comedy, not as gentle as, Rob and Laura were. It might have worked. I think it would have been interesting to see, to see Carl Reiner in a domestic comedy where the where the husband and wife would trade barbs back and forth between each other. I think that might have been an interesting show had they ever done anything like that.
Yep. That music means
here comes the music.
Kind of cruising towards the end of the regular time. Don't forget, gentlemen, if you want to hang around, there's a little bonus time after the regular live broadcast. If folks want to hear us talking about them behind their backs, listen in the archives, because we got stuff to talk about. No, about you and you and you. I do want to thank our chatters, our live chatters, Fogsbane and Evil Annie Ruppert for joining us, and Guest 1467, whoever you may be, in the usual gang of suspects. Thanks for coming down here, guys. King, Charles.
The first,
sorry. And Gar.
Blair! I am still here, somewhere.
And with my co-host Dave, each week we, Dave, say hi.
Pleasure as always.
As we try to bring you each week here at Friday at 7:30, a great old-time radio broadcast about horror, science fiction, fantasy, and maybe even a murder mystery here and there. Right here every week. You should just be here. Quit your job and be here.
How about if you're retired?
Then
you have to get a job and then quit it and then show up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, being a kingpin free job. Unfortunately, I have
these
no
are the
vassals.
Requirements.
Unfortunately, I have no vassals. What's that saying? It's lonely at the top.
Now we understand why you're looking for a wealthy woman. All right. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
As for me, I'll take anything with a pulse and less body hair than me.
Well, a pulse would be good. I was mostly interested in the money. So I can prop up my kingdom. Maybe get some furniture that, befits my loyal status, which so far has not been established, because I'm not sure that in the United States whether you can declare a kingdom or not.
I don't know. But real quick, with about 30 seconds left, Dave, if you don't mind, tell them where folks can watch Weirdness Really Bad Movie tonight.
Hey, if you're a little bored, don't know what to do, check out The Vortex, horrorhost.net, 9 o'clock, or right about there. Weirdness Really Bad Movie. Holly will be there, and John Ivanovich, you're showing the movie The Clock of No Hand. No hands on the clock. No hands on the clock. That's what it is.
See you next time, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Live late.
Oh, I timed that music really good. We're in the bonus time.
You did. Perfect. Perfect.
So the face with no clock. The clock with no face. The hands of time with no... What? Yeah.
Well, the blog talk
clock
is different than my computer
clock. With no battery, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
Clean your clock.
And
yeah.
Like... And there must be a time delay because there's like a disparity between the time that they're showing left and the time you actually get cut off. It's weird. Thank you, Blog Talk. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you, Blog Talk. Blah, blah, day. So last week I showed The Raven, the 1960. Oh, what was it? 62, 63? No, I can't remember.
63,
I think. It had Vincent Price and Boris Karloff and Peter Lorre and a very young Jack Nicholson in it. And I understood that Vincent Price signed on because he really liked he had read The Raven, and he was like, this is going to be great, you know. And it became so contrived and so watered down, he really actually kind of phoned in his part, because he just became so disinterested in it as it was going on. They just kept stretching it out and stretching. Somewhere in there was the aspect of the poem from Poe is in there, but I had seen it.
Was that?
I'm sorry.
Was that one of those Corman ones?
Yes, yeah. Corman did a slew of these films, and this was one.
A lot of those Corman Poes, they were almost more ripped out of H.P. Lovecraft than they were of Poe. But Poe was more recognizable.
Right. Where you have magicians fighting each other. I don't really, you know, I don't know if Lenore was in on that or not.
Yeah, no.
you know, like, and Lenore turned out to be a woman with a plan. And she was like, I need to go where the power is. She was a power broker or something. It was really, really contrived the way it ended up.
Yeah.
And Vincent Price loved when he came in. It's like, you guys are going to do a movie about The Raven? Oh, this is going to be great. And then he got in there. It's like, oh, well, I've signed the contract. What am I going to do? And so he just went through it. But just, I had seen it before. And I had talked to Sir Dale Kay about this earlier in the week, that I had seen it before, and you had to have a certain mindset to enjoy kind of the comedy, because there's no laugh track and you're just sitting there going, okay, and Laurie's doing his thing and Benson's doing his thing and Karloff's doing his thing, and it's like, this is so unusual.
You know, I thought it was neat how Roger Corman would always hold everybody. He'd contract them for so many days or so many hours of work, and whatever they didn't use in one film, he made them come back contractually to do some other film.
Boy,
like when he held a Karloff to that one where basically he had Karloff for like 24 hours is all he had, and they built the movie around this aging actor, and they showed the movie in the drive-in that was The Terror, which was another Corman film, and then kind of built this thing around that and had Karloff there at the end of the night at the drive-in. Basically, it was, you know, Karloff was hardly in it at all. They had him for like 24 hours. And I think that was amazing. Corman not only had that, but he held people to the, hey, you still owe me 15 hours, you know?
Yeah.
Get back on the set.
Hey, that guy knew how to turn a buck. I mean, in his wake, he left some entertaining movies. Sometimes a little tongue-in-cheek, but still good. Good stuff. I love the 1935 The Raven with Karloff and Lugosi.
Yeah.
You must be familiar with it, at least. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Again, not really following.
Another film I like of those two guys together was the early version of Black Cat. That didn't really have anything to do with Poe's story. But I think that was one of their best films that they did together.
Yeah.
Personally.
My only anecdote about The Black Cat was I saw it. I don't know how they did this. Well, one was the times were different. They wrangled a whole bunch of, like, the entire everybody into the school auditorium in elementary school. This had to be around Halloween. And they showed Frankenstein versus the Werewolf, or whatever that one is, and they showed The Black Cat. And these were terrifying films for little kids. So I'll always remember The Black Cat. That was when they pulled the bricks down and the cat sitting there on someone's shoulder going, I was like, what are you doing? That was crazy.
Well, Dave just, I guess I'm not allowed to mention this, but one of Dave's shows features a zombie walk, and that's, I guess, all I'm allowed to say.
You're only allowed, are you under contract? What's going on?
No. This is your show.
I asked him not to talk about our show. Because
okay.
King, you're still under contract for another 15 minutes.
That's right.
Okay. I'm here.
I can mention it, but I can't mention it much. Okay, thanks, guy.
Yeah.
There you go.
This show has turned out to be one of the most entertaining shows about old radio that I've ever heard. It's great for me who, for so many years, just, you know, had no one to connect with that had any idea even what old-time radio was, you know, not to mention that, you know, anybody that would actually, you know, listen to it or appreciate it. So it's great to know that there is still people that, you know, that know these shows, things about it. You know, I love to learn about.
This is the thing, King.
Yeah.
It's a discovery thing for me. I mean, I've heard some of these shows that I've played, and I want to share them. But part of it is discovering and sharing the experience with listeners who haven't heard these stories before, right along with me for the first time.
This is the first time you heard this story, right, Dale?
What's that?
This is the first time you heard this story tonight.
Yes, that's correct.
So it was new for you as it was for anybody else listening in.
There's another radio drama called I Love a Mystery, which was out of the 1950s. And they do this long story about Temple of Vampires. Crazy, crazy. Fun stuff. Lots of organ music, screaming.
Carlton E. Morris was the writer-producer for those. And Mercedes McCambridge, who you heard on a lot of mystery theaters in the 70s and 80s, as well as other shows. A young Tony Randall was one of the regulars in the I Love a Mystery as well.
I think he was 15 at the time,
it sounded like, you know?
Yeah. As I recall, they had a couple of shows that were kind of humorous, didn't they?
They had some weird plot directions in it. One of them starts off with a bunch of weird plots.
There was some good camaraderie between them that kept things going.
If memory serves,
those were 15-minute shows, and they would, Garb, what would they be like? Maybe like almost 20 episodes, some of those?
Oh, yeah, 20 episodes, Temple of the Vampire, 20 episodes.
One of my favorites of theirs is the story, it's about 20 episodes long, of Bury Your Dead Arizona.
Yeah, so many. Each one of them have the same cast where, I know in Temple of the Vampires, I believe, that if memory serves, and I could be wrong, it might be a different radio show. There's a lot of them there's this little kid that stows away in the airplane at the beginning of the story. And then they keep this kid.
And they keep
the kid, dragging him around. It's like, there's vampires, kid. Watch out. We'll just, you know, drag you along. And,
Here, kid. You're vampire food. We're out of here.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
So you always keep low one with you, you know?
Yeah.
He's a kid as a meat shield. Take him, take him.
Yeah, the I Love a Mystery. All of these. That's what I love about these is these are the evolution, the building blocks that would later become used in television and movies and stuff. I mean, this just Barry. It's amazing that they just used audio to convey not only voices but also atmosphere. And I love old time radio. It's just so amazing.
It is
theater of the mind. Theater of the mind.
Yeah, theater of the mind. Yeah. Make up your own dream or nightmare, and you know, we'll fill it with we'll fill it up for you.
Yep, it's all mind over matter.
They filled this one up with bats and snakes and electric eels and piranhas. You know, you could. You realize what it would take to do that on television? My God.
But
well, I mean,
Wood could do it for a buck and a half.
Yeah. From the time, you know, I mean, as David explained in a couple of the earlier shows, a lot of these were done kind of on a shoestring. You know, somebody would get an idea and say, you know, let's do this show, let's run with it. And like Dave had explained earlier, you know, the head guy was the producer, director, writer, actor, and, you know, the whole thing. And it's like whoever he could get in the cast, and that was it. But it filled time. And, you know, like you said about this show, it moved around a lot and was sustaining. I think the episode tonight had the Richfield they mentioned, I think, at the end, they mentioned their sponsor, Richfield Oil.
Right.
But
lost them for about half a year.
Yeah. So a lot of these were just, you know, it's like, hey, we got 15 minutes or half an hour to fill. What do we got? What's out there that we can get, you know, for cheap? And,
you know,
and
what's
important
is,
yeah, I'm
sorry. What's funny is when Richfield dropped Escape as a sponsor, or they went on to sponsor two news programs instead. I wouldn't think that was an upgrade, but maybe they thought it was. I don't know.
At the time, I don't. Yeah, I mean, obviously during the war, people would be more tuned to the news. I'm not really sure.
Right, but Escape didn't start till 47, so that was well after the war.
Yeah, but it did go in through the Korean War. I think you said it was on until 1954. So at that time, I would guess that people would be more, you know, be looking for news programs and not necessarily, you know, something else.
It did go on Armed Forces Radio as well. You know that a lot of our programs did, especially by then, because. By the 50s, so many programs were doing transcriptions, either playing the transcriptions or recording transcriptions so they could have them for later as well for broadcast. And so much easier to share programs with things like the Armed Forces Network.
Yeah.
With all the stuff that was on the Armed Forces Radio, I'm surprised the soldiers had time to be doing war stuff, man. I was like, Let's sit down and listen to this. See what's going on. Hey, a lot of entertainment for the troops.
Well, that's an interesting.
That's why the war lasted so long. Come on, Gar.
This I didn't know until about a couple of years ago. they found something like 7,000 or 8,000 AFRS discs in a warehouse in Los Angeles, I think, and they immediately shipped them to the Library of Congress, which may sometime in the future, you know, start releasing these. And it was, what they would do, and I'm sure a lot of fans already know this, but for those who don't, they would ship the records and a phonograph off to, you know, Europe or, you know, wherever the armies, you know, wherever the troops happen to be. And somebody would, you know, set up the phonograph and play these records. And that's how the troops got to listen to these shows. And I think it was great that, you know, despite some of these shows being sustaining and, you know, kind of like, well, we got to fill 15 minutes or this or that, that there was a lot of very high quality shows like the one that we listened to tonight and the whole series that survived because they did capture people's attention. So, I mean, my applause to that.
When I was in the military, no one ever hinted me, hey, check out our Armed Services Radio, man, see what's going on. I don't know if it was defunct by the time I was in there, but I didn't have a clue. Or else I would have tuned in. I would have been like, yeah, I need to check this out.
Same here.
They still have Armed Forces Television, but I don't know that they have Armed Forces Radio anymore.
I was going to ask, Gar, did they have USO shows for you then?
No, I was on a ship. The USO shows are typically land-based.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, we were floating around in the North Atlantic. Way too cold for someone to sit there and put a show on.
Thermal, got to wear your thermal tutus.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I had thermal everything. Thermal belly button warmers, all kinds of stuff.
Sounds frightening.
So yeah, in the episode that we listened to just now, the bloodbath, they did have so many different things they tossed in there to keep it going, and we were talking just a second ago, and I was like, all of a sudden it reminded me of just two things: Ed Wood and a huge octopus. You know that it was like, yeah, toss in everything, keep those fans coming in. You know.
Well, you know what? I was disappointed. The only flaw in Bloodbath, the only danger element of the period they left out, because I grew up with an unnatural fear of quicksand. Because
that's right.
It was quicksand.
I love that meme that says, you know what? I really thought that in my life quicksand would be more of a danger.
Yeah.
And it's not.
It was in jungle movies. It was in westerns. It was in Blazing Saddles. It was
what else? My favorite Martian probably had a quicksand scene in it. You know,
yeah.
Probably did.
You know,
Lost in Space had it.
Batman had it. I'm sure.
Batman had quicksand.
Oh yeah.
Batman had everything.
That's true. Even Vincent Price.
Batman had Billy Belt. He was okay.
Yeah.
Well, Vincent.
You know, it's funny. There were a lot of cameos in Batman.
Vincent Price.
Egghead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Egghead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very funny. He was great at that. I'm trying to think who else. Zsa Zsa Gabor was in it.
Zsa Zsa Gabor, the Green Hornet guy, and Kato was in there. All kinds.
How many
of
people made cameos?
Milton Berle.
Milton Berle, Louis DeLilac. Yep.
Right.
Remember all the cameos popping
Burgess
out of
Smith
the.
Only did it because Burgess Meredith only did it because his kids wanted him to be in it.
Yep. Sammy Davis Jr. popped out of the window while they were climbing up the wall.
A lot of people did for those.
And Johnny Carson did too. Yeah. Yeah, that was. If you didn't, if you weren't in it, you got still got a chance whenever they were climbing the wall. So
right.
Stick your head out.
I got a little bit nervous as Adam West got older and older, and so, like, gosh, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I sent off and I said, Adam West, please sign all this stuff and send it back to me, and he did, and I was like, all right, I got his autograph, because I didn't know, and he's still around now. He's like, he's putting stuff out there on Facebook about how to cook beef and all kinds of different things. He's still going to have some type of a personal appearance with Burt Ward, the Robin guy, at like a Comic-Con or something. Still going.
Oh, 'cause they actually They actually did a new animated feature.
They did, and they're looking to do a sequel to that one. So.
And Adam West is also a voice
That one.
He's also the voice of a character on The Simpsons.
Simpsons and Family Guy or something. He's like Mayor Quahog or something like that.
Yeah, he was the mayor, wasn't he, on Family Guy?
Yeah. Insane mayor. I love him. It's like, he's not acting. That's just Adam West. You know what I'm saying?
Well, gentlemen, all good things must come to an end, even this. Thanks again for sharing a great show.
All right. Thanks for having
thanks
me, kiddies. Blah, blah.
Okay. See you next time.
Same
bat time, same bat channel.
That's right. Ding dong. Blah, blah.
See you radio.
Say bye, Dave.
Goodbye, Dave. Bye.